Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Good evening and welcome back to Hour 2 of Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. It's Sunday, July 13th, and in honor of the 13th, Tim, we're going to talk to author Marie D. Jones about the year 2013. She has a new book out, Envisioning the World After the Events of 2012, The End of Days or a New Beginning. This is Marie's second jaunt onto the darkness on the edge of town with us. She's the author of, or co-author of Supervolcano, the catastrophic event that changed the course of human history, and also Science, How New Discoveries in Quantum Physics and New Science May Explain the Existence of Paranormal Phenomena. She's a widely published writer with hundreds of credits, including dozens of inspirational gift books and 5 Chicken Soup for the Soul books. She is also a licensed New Thought minister and spiritual counselor with a background in metaphysical studies. On top of that, she whips up a mean margarita.
Ah.
Welcome to the show, Marie D. Jones. Good evening.
I had one of those right now.
Yeah,
boy.
don't we both? Well, thank you for spending Sunday the 13th here with us in the studio and talking to us about your book. Yeah, I appreciate it. Now, your book is, is this coming out? Is it out right now?
It's actually out. It's available on Amazon. I think it hits the bookstores on July 1st.
On July 1st. Okay, so it did hit
mortar stores. But yeah, it's out.
Okay, great. Well, let's talk a little bit about this. Now, this is Envisioning the World After the Events of 2012. What can you tell us, Marie? Give us some background on the Mayan calendar and the 2012 end of the world that they keep predicting.
Okay, basically, we're talking about interpretation of various mythologies. And we'll start with the one that's the most popular. The Mayan long count calendar. This is a 260-day calendar. It's something that the Mesoamericans used thousands of years ago, including the Aztecs. Well, apparently, this particular calendar, and we all know that the Maya were a very advanced civilization, it ends at a certain time, on a certain date. It ends on December 21st, 2012. And so for decades, you've had people, scholars and metaphysicians and people in the historical community trying to figure out why. The Mayans did talk about end times. They did talk about cycles, and their calendars indicated certain cycles. Well, why does the calendar end for good on this particular date? This has been the question that everybody has been arguing about and talking about and trying to somehow interpret, because they didn't leave us a whole lot of information to go on. One thing they did say was that it would be a time of change and transformation. So the metaphysical community has taken that and kind of run with it and is talking about this being a time of a shift in consciousness, both individually and collectively. So that's a very beneficial thing, except for those people that will not have a shift, who will be left behind.
Right.
Unfortunately, the great Western religious traditions are kind of now sort of associating their own mythologies, their end times, which are very violent and apocalyptic, with 2012. And there is absolutely nothing in any of the great traditions that point to this particular date.
Now, first of all, you said that the Mayan calendar was a 262-day-a-year calendar.
A 260-day calendar. They also have a 365-day calendar called the Hob. They have another calendar called the Venus calendar. These are people that had different calendars for different necessities. The one that...
Now, which calendar shows the 200 and, or
very,
shows the...
Very confusing, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, the one that everybody's focused on, it's called the Zolkin, the T-Z-O-L-K-I-N. And it is their long count calendar. And it's a calendar that they used particularly to measure very long time periods. In other words, the other calendars that they use were for, you know, more agricultural, measuring a year, maybe 10 years, things like that. This one was the long-term one. They were literally looking ahead thousands of years into the future.
Well, now, let me ask you this, too, because this is something that's come up before that we've talked about on the show and have curiosity. Now, and maybe this is myth. Maybe this is something you can help us out with. But the months July and August didn't come until Julius Caesar and Augustus Caesar, right? Those months were made supposedly to honor them?
Absolutely. And that is why there are several different end dates, including different beginning dates that are associated with the long count calendar. The problem has always been, how do you correlate the Mayan long count with our later Western Gregorian calendar?
Right.
And people have been trying to do this for over 100 years.
Right, and the Chinese calendar itself, which is, isn't that considered to be one of the oldest calendars? Aren't we in the year 3050 or
exactly.
whatever through them anyway? So haven't we already crossed the 2012 threshold?
Exactly.
How are we able to rectify 2012 with the Mayans, and why do we give so much credence to their philosophy that, you know, I guess that's where I'm really confused by all of this.
Yeah, and one of the reasons why I wrote the book is because I was as confused as you are. And you know me, we've talked before. I like to... If I get really interested in something, I like to write a book about it because I'm learning, and then I want to kind of tell other people what I've learned. And my book actually focuses very little on the Mayan calendar. I have to mention it, of course, because
right.
it is what most people associate. But there's a lot of other stuff that could happen in the next 4 years. But getting back to the calendar...
Hold on 1 second. Tim, you have a question?
Just with the calendar, Marie, isn't it the fact that the reason that the Mayan calendar is so integral to the entire 2012 theory is because there are certain dead spots in the calendar where, like, major chaos has happened. For example, Hitler comes to power. You have the extermination of the Jewish race the concentration camps. That happened in one of these little dead spots in the calendar. And I don't know exactly what the terminology is for it, but there are, what, 6 or 7 different interruptions in the calendar or in the actual calendar in which some major event has happened in history that has been almost, for lack of a better term, something chaotic that's changed the course of history.
Oh, absolutely. And yet, at the same time, we can look to prophecies of Nostradamus or Edgar Cayce or Malachi and the, you know, the biblical prophets, and interpret events in accordance with their time frames. So a lot of this is interpretation. It's matching events that happen with dates that the Mayans had for their different underworlds. They've got different underworlds that we're going through. We're about to enter into the universal underworld, which is the final, according to their calendar. But the real association with 2012 for the Mayans was actually an astronomical event. And that's, you know, what has really gotten people so excited. And that's the fact that during this particular time, there's supposed to be a galactic alignment. And this is, when we're going to be in the middle of the galactic equator. And it's going to happen exactly on the winter solstice of 2012. So this amazing astronomical prediction is what gets most people excited. How did they know that this rare astronomical alignment was going to occur where we are going to be literally in the middle of the Milky Way, you know, on this particular day? But we can also look to the ancient Egyptians, the Sumerians, the Babylonians. They all had major, major advanced knowledge of astronomy, cosmology, and things like that. But again, nobody, including the Mayans, have ever said that the world's going to end. If well, anything, right. and they have these said things, it's going to change.
Well, like with Nostradamus, you know, his quatrains and things are so open to interpretation that you can pigeonhole some of his cryptic messages into whatever you want them to read,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, exactly. And I think that's what's happening with the Mayan calendar. And even, you know, the people that consider themselves to be experts, not in the metaphysical community so much as people that are in the history end of it, will say there's not a whole lot on their end that is anything but interpretation. In other words, what the Mayans have left us from 3,000 years ago when they began this calendar is legend, oral tradition, oral stories that have been passed on, very little writing, and a lot of that has been, you know, symbols that have to be interpreted. I mean, nobody from that time period sat down and wrote a book and said, this is exactly what we're thinking when we end our calendar on this particular date.
And couldn't it just be something as simple, Marie, as Larry, the Mayan that was responsible to chip the calendar, either died or just got bored of making the calendar and just quit?
You know, my son, who's 7 years old, because he's totally into everything that I do, he said, Mommy, couldn't it be they just got tired of doing the calendar and went off to do something else? I'm thinking, you know what? What does it keep it simple, stupid? Probably
exactly.
The simplest. I'm not going to sit here and tell you guys that there's nothing to this. I am not an expert on the Mayan calendar.
You're not?
No.
Hang up the phone, Tim.
But the research that I've done and the research that I've seen from other people is very heavily concentrated on interpretation. And, you know, most of those people will be the first ones to say what they're basing their information on are talking to Mayan elders who have learned what they've learned about Mayan belief through oral tradition that has passed down through thousands of years. What little written tradition there has been.
Right, but we also have learned in the 20th and 21st century cultures is that there's a thing called the telephone game.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Tell one friend something, and they turn it around. By the time it's done, you know, Kermit the Frog is the Antichrist, and Scott Baio is our savior.
Oh,
and,
Scott.
You know, it had nothing to do with what was actually spoken or said. You know, everybody seems to inflect it and then put in their own interpretation of the interpretation, right?
And, you know,
because we assume that, well, what Tim really meant to say was.
Right, exactly.
What I meant to say is, how is Scott Baio going to be our savior? He can't handle one kid.
I know it.
Stop it.
Oh, just, you know, poor Scott.
He's coming into power. Would you back off?
Scott is coming in. He's what now, 46? He's coming into power.
That's right.
I think the third season ought to be called Scott Baio's 46 and a Mess.
No,
a really hot mess.
Stop
a
it.
Hot Hollywood mess.
Yeah.
But you're totally right. And again, I'm not discounting the research that anybody's done. There have been books on 2012. There's going to be a whole bunch more hitting the shelves. Everybody be ready. But when we're talking about something, it's just like with the Bible, with the Quran. When we're talking about events that occurred thousands of years ago, most of what we have now to go on is built into mythology,
right,
storytelling, legend,
folklore. That and the fact that every generation before us has believed they are living in end times.
Yeah,
and can manipulate the words of the Bible to correlate perfectly with things that have happened in their lifetime, which would lead them to believe that they're the generation that will see the return of the Christ.
Absolutely.
Or the rising of the Antichrist.
It's like, you know, the Bible code, one of the things that I wrote about, and I have a chapter that's focused on, you know, the positive side of this end times, the idea that there will be a transformation, because that's always a good thing. And
right.
Then I thought, well, you know, I've got to show the other side of the coin. All the gloom and doom and, oh, we're all going to die. There's going to be a gamma ray burst. We're going to fry right where we're standing. And a lot of that comes from religions that are based on fear.
Oh, God. Now Tim's all excited. He thinks
yeah,
with the gamma
well,
ray
you know,
burst, he's going to become the Incredible Hulk.
Oh,
Tim Mad.
Cool.
Tim Smash.
Smash, Tim. Smash.
Tim wants KFC.
KFC. Oh, that sounds good.
Yes, it does. See? Everybody's addicted to the crack chicken, Tim.
Yes, I know. What do they put in that stuff?
I don't know. A little bit of heaven and a little bit of God.
MSG.
That's, hey, back off.
I love that stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, you know, this is, we're not going to know what's going to happen until it happens. But here's the problem. Everything that happens that year,
uh-huh,
you're going to have groups of people saying, see, told you so, see? And look at Y2K. First of all, nothing really happened. But then every little thing that did go wrong, you know, maybe gas prices went up 5 cents that year. Ooh. You had somebody that said, see, I told you.
You know what I think is funny and sad all at the same time? See, I used to be in sales, and I used to sell collectible gold and silver coins. And boy, I literally, that was the first sales job that ever totally destroyed me. We would sell silver and gold to people totally on fear. It's Y2K is coming up. Experts and analysts who wrote the original code are telling us the world as we know it is going to stop at the stroke of midnight because computer code was not ready for this.
Exactly, yeah.
We are going to lose our bank accounts. The only tradable commodity that we will accept is silver and gold. You should be sinking as much money as you have into bags of junk gold and silver so that you've got it trade and commodity-wise to save yourselves. And the people that bought into that fear and did that, and literally, I lasted a few months, and I was so sick to my stomach selling on fear. And more what worried me was the people buying in fear of that I see that makes more economic sense for the government and for businesses. You know, they love the gloom and doom and the death of it all. But again, if we look at the actual calendar, the year 2000 was in the year 1994, right? Because we caught 6 years up on the months that we've added. And
our millennium was off.
Right.
I mean, people, we can't get our own calendar straight. Why are we worried about this one?
Exactly.
And, you know, like you said before, other calendars, I mean, the Muslim calendar, I believe, ends in 2076 or something. The Jewish calendar, 2240, I believe. You know, then people have predicted the return of the Krishna avatar. That was in 2002, 2003. That never happened. So we have to keep in mind that we do need to be a little bit logical and reasonable about this. Yet, I do believe that there are going to be major things that happen in 2012. And one of the reasons why I believe that is because I am a firm believer that if you have enough people who believe
exactly
something's going to happen, they're going to make it happen.
They're going to bring it upon themselves to have something occur.
The power of intention.
Oh,
you know?
Sure. No doubt. Yeah. I mean, you know, what is it? Who was talking to us, Tim, that said if it was just 100 people focused on the global warming deal, it would be fixed. Do you remember that? It was just one of our past guests.
Oh, wow. I want to hear that. That's
he's serious. He said with intent that if we were able to all come together and focus on certain things, we would make these problems go away, which sounds, kind of lollygagging and tree hugging to me. But Tim and I have also, you know, with our website, with Darkness Radio and the MySpace pages, we've started taking and accepting people's prayer requests and healing requests for immediate response. You know, and people are, Dave, please help my this happened, or I was in the hospital with that, or, you know, our grandfather is dying and da da da. And we post these stories, and we don't guarantee any results, but we post the stories and the requests. We get hundreds of responses, and the turnaround is insane that we're getting. You know, a friend of ours who was collapsed and had a massive asthma attack and was in the hospital in a coma-like state, and it wasn't looking good from what we've been told by friends and relatives. They had basically come in to do the last rites. We put up these prayer requests. Last talk I had with her, she isn't even using her inhaler anymore. She came out of this. The doctors were astounded. Everybody was blown away. Another friend of ours, her daughter was pregnant with a baby, and during the post-testing or pre-testing, they found that the baby had a brain tumor, and all the prayers and healing and energy went out to that, and there was no follow-up. They weren't able to find any sign of the brain tumor again.
Right.
And you look at just the focus of just a couple of screwball bald guys running a goofy paranormal radio show and having our listeners say some prayers and intention out there, and some major changes have happened in people. You know, of course, we're not taking responsibility as it being us, but it's just that, you know, if we're helping to pull people together to focus on the good, I'm all for that.
Right.
You know, and given the power to where it goes, wherever the prayers are being lifted to, whoever's listening and whoever's got the ability to help with the light of the universe to heal, I mean, it seems to be working, and we are seeing intent is, you know, a very powerful tool.
And if people want to check out that show that, we were talking about earlier, it's Dane Alexander. It aired on May 25th.
Dane Alexander, yes.
Yeah. And, you know, I've always been a believer that collective intention has the power to shift paradigms and change all kinds of things. And I think that's what we're going to be seeing. Now, the problem with that is if you've got half of the people thinking transformation and you've got half thinking, you know,
doom
devastation.
And gloom. Right, right.
Who knows? Maybe they kind of, you know, void each other out. But I would recommend, I highly want to recommend a book that I think is probably on my list of the top five most life-altering books I've ever read. It's by Dr. David Hawkins, and it's called Power Versus Force, The Hidden Determinants of Human Behavior. And his whole book, he takes a look at, you know, intention and how one person operating at a certain level can counterbalance a million people operating at a lower negative level and all this kind of stuff. And he actually has amazing research to back it up.
And the name of the author again?
David Hawkins. And it's called Power Versus Force. Absolutely life-altering book.
Power Versus,
Force. And, you know, it's funny because when I read that book, I had just started writing 2013, and I thought, wow, you know, I wonder if everything that's going to happen is going to be because of human intention. Is there going to be any outside influence making something happen to us, or are we going to be making it happen to ourselves? That's what's going to be really fascinating for me to see when we wake up that first morning of 2013. Who's going to win?
Exactly.
The good guys or the bad guys?
Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll start talking about your book. And now that we've gotten past the rhetoric of 2012, let's start talking about 2013 and when Marie D. Jones rules the planet. We'll be back with more on The Darkness on the Edge of Town.
We thought El Chupacabra meant the cup of coffee in Spanish.
Me llamo Eduardo Especial. ¿Cómo está el yay?
What you talking about, Willis?
Shows you what we know. Stay tuned. There's more to come from The Darkness on the Edge of Town. Do you hear loud moans and banging on your walls? Next time, pay for the better hotel room.
Oh, no more Yankee, my winky. The donga needs food.
Welcome back to The Darkness on the Edge of Town with your hosts, Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis.
And I'm Dave Schrader.
And I guess I'm Tim Dennis.
That would be right. And you're listening to The Darkness on the Edge of Town. Thanks for spending your Sunday evenings here with us. We're now going to talk to Marie Jones and talk to her about her book, 2013, Envisioning the World After the Events of 2012, The End of Days or a New Beginning. Are you sure there's not more of the title you wanted to add to this, Marie?
You know, I swear I'm the queen of long subtitles.
I think the name of our book is going to be Darkness Radio, The Ins and Outs of Radio from a Paranormal Perspective with your hosts, Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis of Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio, or a.k.a. DarknessRadio.com.
There's
do you think we'd sell a book?
For this, though.
Why
I'll
is it?
I'll tell you what it is. My publisher told me, because I thought, do I have to have such long subtitles?
Keywords on Google?
Absolutely.
There you go.
You got it, because I've got two books that I'm writing now, and the titles are astronomical.
Oh, my gosh.
But that's the reason. People, you know, you want to give them as many words that they can Google as possible. So, anyway, that explains that.
Well, now we
understand. It's not that I'm trying to drive people crazy.
Oh, damn. We were going for the crazy angle. Well, let's talk about your book. Now, what is your book, and what are you covering?
Well, you know, what I did is I kind of did what I did with science. I wanted to take a sort of overall look at the idea that in I started writing the book a year ago, that in a few years, something might happen. And that according to religion and spirituality, these things might happen. According to medicine, these things might happen. According to the environment, you know, what I did is I literally wrote a book that covers every potential change that we could see and that we probably will see. And the ones that we probably will see are things that are already in motion. I mean, we're talking about major shifts in geopolitical power. All power seems to be moving out of the West into the East. we're seeing now the results of, our dependency on fossil fuels and possibly reaching peak oil. We've got all kinds of economic crises to deal with. So I wanted to include those because I truly believe that those are going to be the major challenges of 2012. And if we can get through those, we will wake up on 2013. If we can't get through those challenges, we may not.
You know, I'm not even sure we're going to get through 2008 with the current gas prices. The way they're rolling and the way people are acting, it's starting to get kind of frightening to me.
It is. And, well, here's an example. I just sold my home. I'm in San Diego, California, which is considered one of the worst housing markets in the country because it had blown up years ago and house prices went through the roof. And now, of course, we're on the backslide. I literally sold my house for a profit because I used my intention. And I know people will say, yeah, right. Everybody around me is in foreclosure. I've had neighbors had to walk away from their homes. But I did get rid of my house just in time. I made a huge profit. I was very lucky. And every week, you know, my uncle is a realtor. Every week he's saying, oh, my God, it's getting worse. It's getting worse.
Listen to this, Tim. She's well off. She sold her house. You're going to give her her number?
I'm single.
Yeah, there you go.
Hey,
You know, Tim.
Cute.
Tim's looking for love in all the wrong places.
Looking for love.
I need a sugar mama, Marie. What do you say? Huh?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, be my boy toy.
2008 may be the year of change for both of you. So.
But you know, you turn on the news last night. They were talking about exorbitant food prices, and because of the gas prices, shipping cargo, we're not getting things as cheaply as we ever will, and it's only going to get worse. And
right.
You've got longer lines at the food banks, and there's no food in the food banks. This is the stuff that is going to either change us for good or bad. Can we rise to the occasion here, or are we just going to collapse? I'm much more concerned about these issues than, you know, whether some ancient civilization saw something in the skies and interpreted it a certain way, which has then been reinterpreted probably 1,000 different ways since then.
I agree. Well, you know what? Let me ask your thoughts on this, and I know I'm probably going to raise some ire out there. Is America ready for its first black president?
God,
why my fear is on this? And, you know, I've joked around, and I always say if a black wins a presidency, I'm moving to Canada. And it's not for bigoted reasons. My worry is some hillbilly redneck dumbass is going to shoot him, and the world, the streets are going to run red with blood.
Hell yeah!
Because there's going to
be... Tim?
Yeah, he's being goofy. But...
No, and I
that is where my fear is, that could be the downfall of our culture, is that a prominent black leader in the most powerful position is assassinated, or even an attempt at an assassination. I mean, you look at the fact of Rodney King, some dumbass driving too fast, 100 miles an hour, trying to avoid cops, gets beat up by the cops. Not that I okay what they did to the gentleman, but the amount of violence and racial tension that burst on the scene because of that. If you can imagine the first black president going down or being hurt by a white American goofball, that's where my concerns come from.
Exactly. And if he had a female vice president who then, I mean, yes, and I work in progressive politics. I'm actually the president of a large organization here in San Diego, and that is a fear that everyone is discussing. Those are real things that we can wrap our minds around.
Right, and if Obama goes down, then the rise of the Antichrist, if he does have
John Edwards.
Hillary. Hillary Clinton in power.
Now, we don't know for sure who the vice presidential candidate is.
Yes, we don't, and I'm hearing different names being thrown around, but you're right. And, I mean, we've got, you know, climate change to deal with. We've got these rising prices that are literally, the middle class is gone. I mean, those of us that are clinging to it are either going to be pushed up or down. And I hate to say it, but the vast majority that are not resourceful are going to be pushed down.
Well, I know I'm spending as much time as I can pushing Tim down.
And that's a huge feat.
It
oh,
is.
Tim, it's speeding up
oh,
on
yeah.
you.
I'm a big guy. That's a lot of power you got to put behind that. You like big guys, don't you, Sugar Mama?
Sugar Mama.
I need me a big boy toy.
Oh, Nina.
Take care of me.
All right. Suddenly we become the paranormal dating service.
You know what? That is such a good idea.
What?
Paramatch.
Paramatch.
Come on. Let's go into business.
All right. Hooking you up not only in life, but in the afterlife. Huh?
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, thanks for bringing that point up. Like, I don't have a hard enough time dating in this lifetime. Now I got to worry about hooking up in the afterlife.
I hear you.
Horrible.
See, some things never change.
Well, that's depressing. Thanks for that, too.
Yeah, really.
Well, now, with the book and the way that you're taking a look at the future, you know, some of the stuff that you cover, will cosmic and earthly chaos disrupt our lives,
right,
and destruct, you know, destructive sunspot cycles, volcanic super eruptions, monster right. storms, mass extinctions, and asteroid threats, not to mention the, you know, complete downfall of White Castle. It's just not as popular.
Turning round.
Yes, it's horrifying.
White Castle is going to be gone?
Shh, don't talk about
Shoot
it.
Shoot me now.
It's a government secret. What do you make of all of the insane weather that we're having, the weather patterns, you know, wetter patterns? I think Tim just passed a chili
patterns.
Dog through his nose. But what do you make of these, you know, the tsunami, these massive earthquakes, the weather that's so insane for different parts of the United States that, you know,
well,
they're
we'll
not
start with
seeing
the weather,
this? Yeah.
Because I am a firm believer. My father is a geophysicist. He's got a background in you know, studying literally the physics of the Earth. And he has a lot of colleagues that are climatologists. And there's definitely something going on. And humans have a major role in it. You cannot abuse something for long without it reacting.
Yeah, don't I know it.
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
Oh, here we go back with our sex lives. Huh?
Hey, what are you talking about, Marie?
Oh,
you
sorry.
Ought to spend a Sunday night in the studio with us, Marie.
Speak for yourself. Huh?
Well, yeah, with all the global abuse that we're doing on our environment.
That could be our undoing. It really could. I mean, it's already affecting.
Well, you know what? Maybe the upheaval is that gas prices get so out of control, people stop using fossil fuels.
Hello.
And we start the backwards trend where we start saving the planet again.
Yeah, and see, here's the thing that's always kind of PO'd me is that all of the solutions that the government is offering for the gas issue are to increase output, not to conserve, not people get off your lazy butts and walk. We're continuously being prodded to be more lazy, more abusive of our environment, more spoiled, when what they should be telling us is, you know what, you guys have overextended your welcome on this planet. Everybody get your crap together.
You know, Maria.
No, it's like increase output. Let's do offshore drilling. Let's do this. Let's do that.
I was actually told by a professor at the University of Minnesota that who's working on using prairie grasses as an alternative fuel source, that their experimentation or their grants for experimentation have been
Wait, so there's a professor at the college that's experimenting with prairie grass?
Come on
that
now.
That sounds a little strange, yeah.
But actually, it's a very good renewable energy source because it grows wild everywhere up in North and South Dakota. It's renewable.
As long as it doesn't burn to the ground with all these, you know, this possibilities of raging wildfires because of the change in weather.
Very true. But the one thing he was pointing out is he's been shut down a couple of different times. As far as grants go for this particular project, and he's been shut down by energy companies because if they can't own the technology, they don't want to produce it, and that's kind of what we're up against, I believe, at least in this country.
I'm going to put on my tinfoil hat and tell you that there are huge conspiracies against alternative fuel sources because of money, just as there are conspiracies to shut down any type of medical research that might cure major diseases. And I have a friend who is a cellular cancer researcher who literally quit. She worked at the Salk Institute of all places, literally walked out because she was so tired of having her breakthroughs shut down. So yes, we're definitely up against the power and the money and the greed. And it's up to the people to say, you know what, I'm not buying your gas anymore.
Yeah, but here's what I don't get about that whole conspiracy theory. And bear with me on this, because I'm just as much into the conspiracy theories, and I think Paul McCartney was killed, and the Abbey Road album cover tells us. And I believe that Elvis has faked his death, and Jim Morrison and him own a nice little gay resort in Paris somewhere.
Tupac is running a Church's Fried Chicken somewhere in Louisville.
That's right.
Tupac.
Yeah. So I'm all for conspiracy theories. But my problem with that is there are enough rich, very rich people out there that want to see a change and want and need medical help as well and get cancers and get these things, that why don't we have privatization? Wow, that was a big word. I couldn't even get it all the way out. Privatization of medical research and alternative fuel sources, that can't be shut down by the government.
I actually think that that's happening a little bit more. There's a place called the Life Extension Institute that's doing a lot of research into aging and the use of supplementation, and they're all privately funded. It just doesn't happen enough because you've got big pharma, and they are so powerful, and they're so influential in the halls of Congress and where it counts, you know, where the laws are made, that I guess we haven't reached that sort of tipping point yet where privatized research is going to be making that much of a difference. But, yeah, I totally agree. All these billionaires out there, you know, if one of you has MS or Lou Gehrig's disease or whatever, put your money where your disease is. I'd love to see more of that.
Yeah, I mean, I can't guess that, you know, we know that the government overcharges for test tubes and Bunsen burners and all this crap, so why can't just a privatization group put this thing together and be doing the medical research and creating it? And I got to guess that pharmaceutical companies would make money hand over fist if we could find a way to stop cancer.
They would. They would. It would be that one pharmaceutical company, though. So maybe it's the others that are stopping the progress. It's that competition. I don't know. I don't have an answer for that, but I totally agree with you. People that
then wouldn't it make sense? Then we take the, you know, top 10 pharmaceutical companies in the country, have them come together on this drug because it's going to be a universal appeal. Everybody can make money off it, and we can start saving lives,
you know,
and
I
saving
mean,
children and saving problems.
People talk about AIDS and the AIDS drugs that have been shut down and that have been the progress has been halted on certain AIDS drugs. And there's somebody's out there with an agenda that we don't quite understand. But here's the thing. If we can come up with a little teeny-weeny thing that you can hold in your hand that you can get your email on and go online and check the weather, but we can't cure a disease that's been around that we've been researching billions of dollars and thousands of hours worth of time in. I mean, what's the problem here? We have the intelligence. We have the technology. So where is the disconnect?
That's a good question. Well, we're going to take our second break of the hour. You bear with us, Marie, and everybody else out there. Stick with us. I hope you're in the chat room. I hope you're chatting with us and talking about the different topics that we're bringing up here. We're going to finish up with Marie Jones when we come back, talking about her book, 2013, Envisioning the World of After the Events of 2012.
Are UFOs real? Does Bigfoot exist? Was Emily Rose really possessed? Who is the next American Idol?
She bangs! She bangs! Oh, baby, but she moves! She moves!
Thank
I'm
you.
Wasted by the way
Thank
she...
you.
We try to answer these questions and more each week on The Darkness on the Edge of Town. Ghosts, goblins, witches, creatures of the night. Yep, that just about covers everybody Dave and Tim have ever dated.
Oh my God, this girl's really turning me on.
Welcome back to The Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Welcome back to The Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Thank you for spending your Sunday, the 13th, here with us.
It's a scary wolf.
Just not as creepy sounding,
is
it?
That didn't sound good.
I know, it's a...
You know what, Marie? He was smacking you around with the microphone there for a second.
You guys.
I know.
That
was
what
that... That was
during the breaks?
Yeah, that's the way we are. We're violent around here.
We're a little rough. You like that sugar, Mom?
Oh,
God. Marie, I think you're going to be hired to every event in California now because Tim's in love.
Pretty much.
Pretty much.
Hey, I'll be there.
Wow. All right. Listen to her.
We'll have fun.
Okay.
All right.
So let's talk some more about your book. Now, how much of this is speculation and how much of this is stuff that you are in on the know and know that this is coming up? And what do you really think it has to do with 2013?
Well, you know, a lot of it is not speculation. I mean, we're always speculating when we're talking about the future, even if it's next week. I mean, we don't have any idea. I'm here in Southern California. The big one could hit tomorrow. Here I am thinking next week is going to be like any other week. But you know, one of the things that I focused on was information technology, because a lot of people, mathematicians, technology experts, do believe that in the next four or five years we're going to see what is called the singularity. And this is fascinating to me. Technology, the speed of communication capabilities, computing power, the decrease in computer size, the literal amount of information that we have at our fingertips is increasing, and it's increasing at an accelerating rate. In other words, it's all increasing, and the rate at which it's all increasing is increasing. And it's all coming to this singular point when it literally will hit a sort of infinity level, where information will pretty much outdo our own ability to think. And a lot of people believe that this is happening so quickly that on December 21st, 2012, maybe we will hit this point of singularity. If you look at things that are happening in computing now, I mean, we're on the verge of quantum computers. We've got smaller and smaller systems that can do more and more. We literally have computers on the verge of...
Did you hear that, Tim? Finally, smaller will be better.
All right.
Uh-oh.
Size doesn't matter. We are so in.
You like smaller sugar, Mama?
Oh, boy. This is getting pretty hot here. Anyway. But, you know, this is one of the things that I do see happening. I mean, you cannot deny that information technology is exploding, and it's exploding exponentially. And in the next few years, I mean, we've only really had computer technology for decades. We have not had it for 150 years. Well, look what's happened since maybe 50, 60 years ago when the first computer was built. It's absolutely insane that the rate of change is increasing. It literally doubles on itself, and that rate of doubling is happening quicker and quicker. It might have taken 10 years for it to double before. Now it's taking 10 weeks. So that's what we're looking at. And what's going to follow suit with that are medical breakthroughs, some really good things, artificial intelligence, bionics, robotics, the ability to eradicate emerging diseases and existing diseases. Yet at the same time, you have a few naysayers that say, well, you know, artificial intelligence is going to take us over, and we're going to be obsolete. That may not be a bad thing.
No, I was going to say.
But, you know, this is what we're looking
Seemed
at.
To work for the Jetsons pretty good. Rosie, the maid, she took care of stuff.
But if we look at this, this is the stuff that you can see happening now, and you can pretty much say, yeah, we're going to see that. We're going to see more medical breakthroughs. We're already seeing them. We're going to see, you know, the population has got to be put under control. We're already seeing changing rates in demographics. We've got more people over the age of 50 than ever before, less younger, you know, I mean, we've all these things.
Less younger people.
Less younger people, yeah.
I don't think so. Not in the Schrader household. I got six of them. So.
Oh, you do? Well, yeah. See? Ooh, you're a breeding machine.
Well.
Yeah.
But listen, I'm laughing through this whole conversation because I don't think anything bad is going to happen.
Do you hear that, Nathan?
Normally,
son, do you hear that? My boy, who's 10 years old, saw the cover of your book and he said, "What does this mean, Dad? What's this 2013?" And I started telling him about the Mayan calendar. And then he just said, "Oh, great. Now I have this to worry about." My 10-year-old. He's like, "Now I have this to worry about." I'm like, "Son, you know what? Just go and enjoy life because, you know, as I tell people, when God wants you, it doesn't matter if it's 2012 or 2009, it's going to happen. So let's just enjoy the time that we have together and, you know, not focus so much on the negative."
My book, Supervolcano, is all about how humans literally were almost driven to extinction and we survived. If we can survive that, we can survive any of these challenges. Short of a major gamma ray burst, then I think we're all fried. But hey, we'll be dead. Who cares? But you're right. My son cried when I told him what the book was about, and then he got really interested in the reality stuff, you know, the differences, the things that were happening with medicine and technology, and, you know, he really is interested in bionics. So, yeah, there's that fear, but I just don't feel like it's going to be a bad thing.
Well, you know, it is what you make of it.
Exactly.
if you go into it expecting gloom and doom and the end of the world, you will, you know, and we've watched this happen. I mean, Tim, people that are ill, right? We've seen this happen. They give in to the disease and just say they're dead.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And it's, you know, I've got a death warrant now and right. You know, my time is ticking and they're gone. Bam.
Yeah.
Then you've got people that say, screw this. I want to live. And, you know, they far exceed. Well, even Christopher Reeve, look at the positivity this guy held
absolutely.
On to. He
absolutely.
Lived longer than the doctors thought he should have anyway.
Right.
Absolutely.
And you can see that there is something to remaining positive in these situations, even when it's hard. I mean, that's the whole idea of this. Remain positive. You know, how easy would it be for all of us at any point in our life to just give in and say, this sucks, I'm done?
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, with all the things that we have to deal with on a personal level, we could easily just cave in and go to our knees and say, that's it, I'm done. But I believe that we have this collective power that, I mean, we saw it after 9/11. We see it after every major disaster. We're not going to give in and die. It's just not in human nature to do that.
Right.
But,
and,
you know
that's what I love biographies. I recommend anybody in the world,
if you
want to read books, read biographies, especially of successful people.
Oh, absolutely.
Because you find out these people came from just the crappiest lives ever, most of them. And it was their belief in themselves and their belief in remaining positive that got them to where they're going.
Absolutely.
And it was their focus on that goal and containing it. You know, and there's all those people, oh, you know, the goals and this is crap. And if you don't know what you're doing, no. But the whole thing is, if you remain positive, you know, I quit my job 2.5 years ago,
mm-hmm.
quit my business with the advent of the gas prices at that time almost hitting $3 a gallon. Oh, my. It crippled a lot of businesses, including mine. And I moved on to a non-paying radio show, which has kept me alive for the last 2.5 years. You know, going out, doing events, you know, doing lectures and being hired to, you know, be presenters at other people's lectures. You know, if you have faith and belief in something and a passion for it, I'm now a firm believer. Whereas before I just, you know, I was one of the sheep who believed that, you know,
right.
good things only happen to people because they kissed ass
they
or they were in the right place. Yeah, or they were
lucky. Yeah, there's no such thing as luck.
No, you believe in something strong enough, and I've really subscribed to the theories behind The Secret.
I do too.
Since then,
I totally believe. I've intended so many things into my
life.
Not all good, but
we get my kids now. We have a great deal. You know, we pull up into the apartment complex I live in, and there's these two front spots I love to park in, and they're always open for us. And we call it rock star parking. So, you know, hey, look who's a rock star, and we get to pull in, everybody cheers, you know, we're very happy. And I do believe that, you know, it is silly stuff like that, but it is the idea of just keeping yourself clear of the clutter. It doesn't mean that we don't all fall.
Right, exactly.
So I do hope that, if anything, people can read your book and take away from that, you know, there is a future. We're in a great technological point in our lives. There's so much stuff that's going to happen.
It's going to be amazing.
You know what? I actually think people should research more, and I don't know what your thoughts are on this, Marie, or if you touch on it in the book, as I just got it, so I haven't had a chance to really start digging into it. But, you know, everybody talks about the advancements in technology over the last 100 years.
Yes.
And how it's, like, exploded exponentially, right?
Yes.
According to the Bible lore in history, there were the certain angels that were to look over us,
right.
That had the ideas of engineering, education, and warfare that were at one point sealed off, right? They were thrown into wherever, purgatory, wherever they were for a certain amount of centuries or millennia. And according to what we've talked to, and I think Adam Bly has talked about this too, right, Tim, in a few of his talks? Tim just shrugged his shoulders.
I was busy.
Asleep.
Yeah. If we're not talking dirty, he's out of the talk.
Actually, during Adam's lectures, I was just staring intently at Marie's picture. So I didn't really listen.
Well, you got pictures?
Oh, yeah. Well, but Adam's got, you know, he was talking about this and that the fact that these angels, according to lore, were released within the last 100, 150 years.
Right.
And it's funny that these technologically advanced beings, angels, spirits, aliens, whatever you want to look at them as, coincide with the history and the lore. And in that time, we made breakthroughs that are insane.
Yeah,
that,
absolutely.
You know, I mean, how big, you know, what was it, 30, 40 years ago, how big a computer had to be? It was an entire room, whole bank of a room, just one wall for the regular CPU, right?
Exactly.
And now we can do it on our cell phones.
You can hold it in the palm of your hand. Yeah, there's a lot
some
of belief
us can.
That that all will be revealed to us in the next few years, or that it's being revealed slowly enough that we can actually wrap our brains around it. Because, you know, human beings, you can't tell them the entire truth. They'll crumble.
Right.
But, yeah, I've heard about that. I've heard about that with aliens, that aliens will reveal what they've known and help us increase our technology and do it in a beneficial way.
What do you think in your book? Do you believe that we're going to make contact after 2012? Do you think anything? Because the Mayans, you know, I, from what I understand, too, is the Mayans, the Aztecs, the Egyptians, there's so much belief that alien technology helped them with their civilization.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? I mean, it's impossible for humans to have created the things that
exactly.
they did.
Exactly. I mean, the Atlanteans, you've got the Sumerians, you've got things that indicate that these people were literally put here from another planet. But I think that contact has already been made. I've always believed that. And I think if it is made during 2012, it won't be because of the Mayan calendar. It'll be because they're contacting us again. I don't think, you know, there are theories about getting help from the outside, and I don't know that I look upon that as an excuse that we give ourselves so we don't have to do the work, or that it's true. I will be just as amazed as everybody else if there is some major revelation. Either the governments come clean, you know, the governments of the world say, okay, we're finally going to tell you what we got, or there is some extraordinary event that occurs and it's all over YouTube and on everybody's cell phones. I mean, that could happen, but it could also happen next week. Just as people who say, oh, they're going to be awful super volcanoes and terrible earthquakes. Dude, we have those every week.
Right.
And super volcanoes, no, you're not going to see one for quite a while. Right. There just isn't the indications that they're there. So, you know,
well, Marie,
there's so much of it that's just prediction.
I want to thank you very much for spending time. I wish you much continued success with your new book. And again,
well,
people can look it up. Marie D. Jones is the author, and the book is called 2013, Envisioning the World After the Events of 2012, The End of Days or New Beginning by Marie D. Jones. And Marie, do you have a website people can go check you out at?
I do, mariedjones.com. And Dave, we need to make a date to meet on the radio a week after 2013 begins.
Oh, you know it.
Talk about what happens. Let's do it.
I'm all for it. And yeah, I think you need to make a date with Tim a little sooner.
That's right,
Sugar Mom. Okay. I'll meet you, Tim.
All right. Well, thank you, Marie. And thank you all for tuning in to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Make sure to join us next week for a brand new show again. We'd like to thank our guests this evening, Stacey Jones, the Ghost Cop, and Marie D. Jones. Thank you, and have a great night.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.